Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello and good afternoon, everybody. Happy New Year. Welcome to this podcast, our first podcast for 2020. In today's segment, we will be talking with Mr. Mark Tyshenko. He is the founder of a leading cybersecurity firm known as Edge Networks. They're based out of Vancouver, Washington. Mark, thanks for your time, and let's go ahead and get started.
Thank you, Ravi. I appreciate you having me on your show.
Thanks for your time. Now, we looked up your bio and all that. We kind of did a little bit of digging around on Google and LinkedIn. It seems like that you have a very deep and a very rich background in cybersecurity. Can you tell us some of the highlights of your career, please?
Some of the highlights of my career. Wow. I started off at Washington State University as a computer science student, and when I couldn't get certain answers, I decided to go to talk to IT professionals to really get a better understanding of how technology works in the enterprise. And during my search, I've decided that I will start a company and figure out how to support users of IT. And this was back in 2001. So during my initial years, I've built a small IT services company that was paying me on a consulting fee, sold that company, and in 2006 started a managed services company. What we focused on was building enterprise-grade Wi-Fi solutions for student housing across Georgia, Florida, Oregon. And during that era of my life, one of the things that I ended up having to do was build extensive fiber networks between all these facilities throughout multiple states. We ended up building over 3,800 miles of fiber so that we could get faster connections to the students of these student housing facilities. One of the things that I really ended up running into was security. You have all these students that are trying to download copyrighted materials and do things that they shouldn't on all these networks. And it gave me firsthand look on how to battle security within an enterprise type setting. I ended up selling that company and building Edge Networks that would essentially become managed IT and managed security. So we have two sides of the business. We have one side of the business does IT support services and engineering for small to medium-sized businesses. And the way we do that is 100% fixed fee. So there's no other fees other than the monthly per employee fee that the customer gets. And that's our commodity-based service for the smaller business. And on the enterprise side, we focus on process, procedure, and cybersecurity, enterprise-grade cybersecurity. And again, we're a mid-market company where we don't go past 2,000 employees.
Okay. Now, how big is your company and how long have you been in business?
So when we started, it was Edge IT. I founded it in September of 2006, and it was kind of dormant. I would do consulting on the side with that organization. In 2016, I have decided to grow Edge IT and rebranded it as Edge Networks. And we went full bore in 2017 as a cybersecurity company.
Excellent. Hey, I noticed on your LinkedIn profile that you, I think you went to school at Washington State University in Pullman?
Wash State in Vancouver was a
satellite. Okay. Yeah,
I
was actually out in Washington. I was admitted to their doctoral program in economics in Pullman. So I remember going out to Washington for about a week or so.
Oh,
anyway,
fantastic.
So anyway, What was it?
How'd you like Washington?
it was kind of desolate, really. There was, I like the school and I like the university. I think it's a very good school from what I hear, but there's just really nothing too much out there. I was like, I think 8 miles away from the Idaho border, and there just really was just nothing out there. So that's why I think I went to school in Ohio. But I went to school in Bowling Green State for my master's. I didn't do the doctorate, but it was probably just about as exciting as Pullman, I think. So anyway, but you know, the Seattle area.
People go to Pullman too.
Harvey?
Sorry, yeah. People go to Pullman to study, not to have a good time there, I hope.
Yeah, but even to study, it's kind of boring. But that area out there is really beautiful. I've been out to Oregon a number of times to see some relatives, and it's a very beautiful area out there. So anyway, do you have a presence in other countries as well? Are you just based out of Washington? Or are you in other states in the U.S. or in Europe or anywhere else?
So right now we have – our headquarters is in Vancouver, Washington. We have a network operations center in Portland, Oregon. We support clients in India, in China, and in Germany.
Oh,
and
wow. Okay.
The bulk of our business is from Oregon, Washington, California.
Excellent. Okay. So now, I think you kind of talked about this earlier in the other questions when we first got started. Who is your typical customer base? Now, you said 2,000 employee size, but is that the only target you're trying to hit, or are you trying to hit more of the smaller markets? What kind of industries do you try to hit upon, or what's your sweet spot, actually?
So our sweet spot is professional services. Other professional services companies, especially ones that are high growth, companies that are transitioning from a smaller mindset to a more enterprise level mindset. We have clients. So one of our most valuable clients, surprisingly, is a 3-person bioscience company.
Oh, really?
To us, they don't generate that much revenue for us, but it's what they do that really intrigues us every day, and how they manage their environment. And then we have clients that are in manufacturing, and we have clients in software. So software startups, software, growing software companies. I was to say which segment we really focus on, I would say manufacturing and software organizations, software development companies.
Okay. What is it about this biosciences firm that intrigues you? Can you get more into that, or do you have confidentiality with them, or are you interested in targeting other companies like that as well, too?
Yes. So we have a relationship with a number of bioscience organizations that are doing just amazing things, and we always feel like it gives us a sense of involvement and mission when we're working with companies that are doing big things. To us, it's a very rewarding experience. So we tend to, especially for bioscience startups, we end up giving significant discounts just so that we can be a part of this mission that they're on. You know, in business, it's not all about money. It's about what we can accomplish for the greater good. Money is just something. It's more of a tool to get to the next place. So we are always very excited to work with companies that do exciting things.
Yeah, that sounds very exciting. I've done, like, I think 90 plus podcasts, and I think you're probably the first company that's kind of, you know, exclusively, you know, probably by circumstance or, you know, what have you, that, you know, that's exclusively on startups. I think that's great. I think startups do need that, you know, cybersecurity advice and consulting, you know, because a lot of people think, oh, startups, you know, there's not enough, you know, money to be made there. But I love your mindset. You know, it's more of a, you know, business relationship building approach and seeing what you can do to help, you know, the SMBs. You know, I think that's great.
The way we see it is we grow with the company, and if we do our job, the customer should grow theoretically. And when the customer grows, then we grow with them, which allows us it becomes a true partnership instead of just a vendor relationship. We tend to not work very well when we get put in a vendor relationship type of organization that thinks that you guys do just this and that's it, stay away from everything else. We tend to get very intimate with our customers.
Oh, that's an excellent business model. I never heard that put so eloquently like that before. Congratulations on that. Now, let's get into your product and service line. It sounds, I've been to your website. It looks like that you have distinct product service lines in the managed realm and in cybersecurity, as we've been talking about. Can you do a deep dive into both of those realms and just kind of give us examples of what you really offer to the startups?
So on the startup side, there's really two services that we do. One is managed IT, and when we talk about managed IT, we're not talking about fixing desktops or just help desk. Help desk is a component of a bigger offering. So when we talk about, we only have one managed IT offering, and we don't really. It's not very customizable for our clients, but it is customizable as far as what the client does. We have a security stack, we have an engineering department, and we have a help desk department. And all of those departments have to work in sync to support an organization, especially on a smaller scale. So for smaller organizations under 500 employees, it's best to keep everything in a kind of package where the customer knows that this is the company that we contact for, or this team is who we contact for these solutions, and this team helps with this. And typically they have a central contact, a customer success manager that really choreographs those relationships between our customer and us. On the managed IT side, we look at it as three buckets. One is the user experience. What is the user experience like? Is technology getting in the way of the company doing business and doing what they do best? Or is the technology component a enabler of the customer's business? So that's the user experience component, where help desk falls under that. Then we have the nuts and bolts. That's all the background systems like servers, cloud services, application support falls into our nuts and bolts bucket. And then we have the leadership component. Leadership is absolutely critical when you are, especially when you're growing. As a company is growing, they start to duct tape things together. And especially in IT, the CFO or the CEO or the COO, they tend to just grasp at things and try to patch their workflows and processes with random technologies. And eventually, over 5-10 years, you get this rat's nest of different systems that nobody knows where what is. And then that's where cybersecurity becomes a very big challenge. If you don't know what you have in your closet, you probably have a lot of dead bugs and very odd things in your closet. And what we try to do is we use a leadership kind of approach to everything we do. Is this really necessary? And do we have awareness of where, what, and who is using these systems? Do we need these systems? After 6 months of engaging with a customer, we tend to find a lot of financial waste and a lot of systems that customers were never aware that they were in their environment, which are major security vulnerabilities. So being aware and having a good idea of what you have on your network is absolutely crucial. And it all starts with leadership and really having a good understanding of what is in your organization, who's doing what. And on the cybersecurity side, we have a managed security solution for companies that don't need IT, but they do want that managed detection and response kind of offering. We have a cybersecurity assessment that we align to different standards within organizations, NIST 853, 800-171. So we can align a company to that standard and help develop a plan so that the customer could either outsource that to us or go and build it themselves. On the cybersecurity side, it's very consultative instead of just here's a package, and it's a little bit more in depth there.
Okay. Have you engaged anything like threat hunting or penetration testing or anything like that, or you kind of make use of other partners for that kind of thing?
We do a combination. It depends on the level of maturity within our customer's environment. We do penetration testing and vulnerability scanning, but that's more on the assessment side for us. If they need any extensive penetration testing, we typically find a partner that suits them best and understands that industry or that product. But high-level penetration testing, yes, we do.
Okay, now do you also help your clients, especially SMBs, like do compliance-related stuff? You know, with the GDPR coming out there and the recent passage of the California Privacy Act, it's called the CCPA, and it's going to affect people who do business in California or who have offices in California. Do you help these SMBs, like making sure that they do come into compliance in case they're audited and so that they don't get fined? Do you do that kind of thing too?
We tend to outsource that to professionals that really understand that. From our experience, the best people to do those kinds of audits are CPA firms and large accounting firms. They do a really good job in auditing those kinds of environments. From a technical side, on the infrastructure and cybersecurity technology side, that's where we come in. We don't do GDPR or CCPA compliance or HIPAA in that matter. We try to stay away from things that we're not good at. Eventually, if everything goes well in the next couple of years, we might acquire an organization that focuses solely on that so that we can have it in our arsenal of tools. But today, as it stands, we don't.
Okay. Excellent. Now, do you have any customer success stories you'd like to share with us? Do you have any testimonials or any case studies that you'd like to kind of share with our audience?
Yeah, so I can't really specify names because most of these larger scale ones are under NDA, but we had one organization that was going through major acquisitions, a large software company. They were acquiring competitors between 2017 and 2018, and their board came to IT and their CTO and said, we need to do a cybersecurity audit of our platforms, both internal and external. So what we managed to discover were a number of gaps within their organization that created waste. That's where the whole waste thing I mentioned earlier was, created waste. And for instance, account finance and marketing were not aligned on what their cybersecurity practices were. So we consulted the organization to standardize on their operations so that their security could be compliant with, I believe it's ISO 27001 that we were standardizing it. Eventually, they took our findings, remediated all those issues, and hired a team to do a full SOC 2 Type 1 certification. So now they're fully certified, and we're still helping them on a regular basis with consulting. So to us, that was a major success because we helped them prepare for that audit and essentially pass it. I believe they passed it on the first try.
Oh, excellent. Okay. Do you have any other stories you'd like to share with us, sir?
On an SMB level, there's an interesting one that happened late last year. And it's not a case study. It's just something that we've experienced. We took on a training company, and they had their own internal platform that they've developed. When we took on that client, the day after we started onboarding them to our systems, we discovered a few critical database servers that were not properly secured. And the moment we sent the email to the customer saying, hey, there's this system that's completely insecure, what do you want us to do? And they tell us, let's wait, let's talk about it next quarter. That night, those systems got hit with ransomware.
Ooh.
It was a linchpin for their whole organization. Everyone used that. Their customers used that platform. So the next day, they could not run their business. It was absolutely terrible. Our team stayed up all night trying to find backups, and we literally just started onboarding this client. We had no idea where what is. Turns out they did not have any backups. Their systems were never patched. Nobody knew even so their headquarters was in Oregon, but their servers lived in Texas in some random data center that nobody really ever visited. But they just used the system thinking that it's just a cloud service. Turns out no backups, nobody managed the environment, and they're essentially in the water on this one and can't really do anything. Our team worked very hard, and I think 16 hours later, so we've discovered it at around midnight, and by 3 p.m. the following day, we had a plan to remediate them. Within the next 24 hours, we got them. We've completely rebuilt their application. So we worked with their development team. We brought our developers on to help rebuild their platform. What we got lucky with was there was an image that we found with the database. And that's where, you know, research and really understanding how the full sphere of IT works helps our customers. Having a good team around, you know, understanding the full sphere will really go a long way. Because we knew where to look for certain things, we were able to find that image and restore their data. They only lost one day's worth of data within their database, and they're back to normal. We've migrated them from so our engineering team and DevOps migrated them from the weird data center, so who knows who they are, to Amazon AWS, completely secured that system, created a separate application to access that system so that it's no longer open to the public internet like it was, and completely remediated them. The customer was ecstatic once they knew that, A, we've discovered a major vulnerability, and B, recovered them right after. It was quite a ride. Those few days were very brutal for all of us.
Wow. Well, congratulations on that feat. It's remarkable. There's probably thousands of, you know, cybersecurity vendors here in the U.S., worldwide. Why should a customer come say, hey, Mark, I want to work with you as opposed to these many other vendors? What, in other words, what kind of separates you from the rest of the crowd?
So just right off the top of my head, one thing is our team is top-notch. One of the things that I personally believe in is if you have a happy team, your customer will be happy by proxy. Because when a happy team does something that they're passionate about, the result is always significantly better than if somebody is doing it as a need or a job. That's one thing. The second thing is they are very experienced with decades of experience from Fortune 100 companies to DoD contractors, very experienced team. And the third thing is we believe, and this is not a marketing thing, I've been saying that internally for years until our marketing department caught whiff of it and started using it as a marketing thing. But what we believe in is if a customer is unhappy with us, they should not have to pay us, period. And we threw contracts out the window about 3 years ago. We said, you know what? Everything we do will be month to month, and everything we do will be fixed. So if we say that it's going to cost you $10,000 for a security assessment, it doesn't matter if we lose money on that deal. It will cost the customer only $10,000. So, and then we will deliver. If we don't deliver, if we don't do something, what we promise, we should not get paid, and the contract and the agreement needs to be severed. So we don't do long-term contracts. Everything that we do is month to month, and our master managed services agreement is a very fair agreement where both parties are held equally liable for whatever it is. There's no one-sided type of approach to things. So when we sit down with a customer, we say, look, if you don't like what we do, you need to fire us. End of story. What that allows us to do is keeps our team on their toes at all times, because at every interaction that we have with our customer, we need to win their business. If we can't give even, you know, the low-level whatever position that the customer has, if we can't give that individual the attention that they need, that could be really bad for our business. So we focus heavily on customer service training and how to interact with our customers and what's the, you know, how do we truly build a relationship with our customer on a daily basis. If we are able to do that, if we can achieve delivering happiness to our customer, the customer will not go anywhere, and we don't need to worry about, you know, locking them into a three-year agreement. So that alone, I think, is very, very different from what most other organizations do. Some companies lock you into a three-year deal or a 12-month deal, and then you end up with a contract that you don't use, but you are obligated to pay for it. I think that's completely unfair. And in this day and age, as an organization, we need to look at the better good of our community, whether it be our clients, our, you know, local city, just people in general. Like yesterday, I've heard one of our engineers, a senior level engineer, very expensive resource for us, got a phone call, and he answered the phone, and it was a lady that had a cybersecurity question. So he talked to her. It wasn't a client, just somebody from our local community that found us. He spent a few hours helping them, you know, guiding them through what they need to do to secure themselves. But that lady reached out to us on Facebook and Google and was praising us for being so helpful. And that is what I think ultimately that is what we want to achieve. We want to achieve a place where we can help everyone. It doesn't matter if they're a client or not. And if we can do that, you can just imagine what we can do for our customers. Does that answer
Excellent.
Your question?
That's the first time I've heard a founder and owner of a cybersecurity company say anything like that. It's so great to hear that, Mark. My hat's off to you and your team. I mean, everybody talks about, the customer comes first, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, it really kind of, it always kind of comes down to the money and everything. And yet, we need money to, you know, for cash flow, pay expenses, grow the business, you know, so forth. But this is the first time I've heard it, like a C-level or a founder, owner of a company say something so refreshing like this for the customer. You know, my business is more in the tech writing, podcast thing, but I try to take an educational approach too. You know, and I did, you know, in this regard, I just set up a new forum on LinkedIn, actually, in which my goal is to educate customers or people on LinkedIn. Hey, this is what cybersecurity is. In fact, I just put a little posting out there today saying, hey, you know, contribute to this group, even if your background is not cyber related, post your questions, post your concerns. I will answer them for you. I want to help and I want to educate people. I mean, there's so many vendors out there, you know, they kind of say the same thing. They've got all these bells and whistles for products, but it comes down to educating the customer about cybersecurity because it's becoming such a complex field these days, you know?
It is a very complex field, but I think I was recently interviewed by a local TV station, and they were talking about how security is becoming this massive problem. But if you really think about it, security has always been a massive problem, even 2,000 years ago. If somebody makes a lock, and it's the best lock possible, there will always be 10 other people that are trying to break that lock. That's completely fine. As long as the companies that are developing tools to protect us are stepping up their game, I think we're in a good place. And the more awareness that the media brings to this issue, the better we are going to be. And I think just in the last couple of years, we have had phenomenal success with new technologies. Just if we are to baseline Microsoft is doing great things to secure us. And, you know, the next generation antivirus, fantastic products. I think we are heading in the right direction. And I think ultimately we are in a better place than we were even 5 years ago from a security perspective. We always tell our customers, you know, it's a problem. Security, we have to be aware. If we're aware, we can then do something about it. If we're not aware, we're ignorant and we are just letting, you know, we're flying by the seat of our pants. So being aware is important. And you're completely right. We need to educate and we need to share information. If we keep that, you know, saying, oh, this is our intellectual property, we know this stuff and we're not going to share, I think as humanity, that is unfair to the rest of the world. We need to just let it all out. And the more people know about it, the more people are aware, the better it is for the rest of the world.
Excellent. I love your viewpoint, Mark. It's so refreshing to hear that. So, anyway, now, does the federal government make use of your services as well, too? Have you been approached, like, by the DOD or military or anybody like that?
No, we have not. We stay private companies, and we try to avoid any government entities. And it's not because we don't want to. It's we don't feel like we are yet qualified to do so. And we're being self-aware of what we can and what we can't do. We get lots of inbound leads through our marketing channels. And we find for, I'd say, more than half of those leads, we find other companies that we go out of our way to find companies that are best suited for that. There's no such thing as a company that can do everything. And as a growing organization with this vision of what we want to accomplish in the future, we can't take on projects that will distract us from what we do best. So we find partners, whether it be a managed IT customer that we can support, but if they're not the perfect fit, we can't deliver them value. We would be charging them way too much for what we would be doing. We typically refer them to another vendor. We have relationship with competitors where we send leads to our competitors. I think it allows us to build a better relationship with other companies that are in the similar industry and show the customer that, you know what, we'd love to help you out, but we can't because we're not a good fit for you, customer. And federal government falls into that category for us at the moment. We do have a few relationships with local governments, but they're very very specific to something that we can deliver to them.
Okay, excellent. Now let's kind of segue now into the general cybersecurity landscape now that we've started 2020. I think one of the big hot button topics was the C-suite, holding C-level CISO and CIO more accountable for, making sure that their organizations were as cyber safe as possible. And, there have been tons of stories, like with the British Airways hack, the Marriott hotel breach, Equifax, so forth. Usually everybody likes to point fingers to the C-suite, and I think the buck does stop with them. But the knee-jerk reaction is to kind of like, let's chop their heads off, let's fire them, let's terminate them, get someone new. But I kind of take the attitude, let's do an analysis first, an examination, take a holistic approach, and then see what happened and where the fault lays, and then decide what actions to take. So what are your thoughts on that? Because this is going to still be a controversial topic in this year.
Yeah, it definitely will be. My opinion on it, and it's merely my opinion, is that, yes, ultimately leadership is responsible for what's happening in their business. And oftentimes what I see is some leaders just, they don't understand it, and they're afraid of it. They think that, cybersecurity is this geek universe where it's unapproachable. But if in reality, the leader, whether it be a CEO or even a CISO, steps back and says, look, I don't understand this, but help me understand it. And the ultimate question is, what do we have and where are we vulnerable? Understanding the gap between what we have and what we don't have, and then building a plan over it. You don't have to fix everything. You don't have to comply 100% with different standards, but you have to be aware. If you're not aware, then you expose the company to bad things. But when you are aware, then you could take steps to mitigate that. And then from the C-suite being targeted by the media, I guess, ultimately it is their responsibility. But I think my opinion is every single organization, every single human being on earth will get compromised at one point or another. The question is, how do we recover from that? Or can we recover from that? If we can answer that question, we can start working backwards to preventing in the future. But ultimately, I believe that everyone's going to get compromised, and I'm a little bit odd, I guess, in that way, where I think that privacy doesn't exist anymore. With Google and Amazon and Facebook knowing so much about us, we threw that out the window. And I know it's not popular to talk about that, but that's my opinion.
Well, actually, I don't think it's an odd way of thinking, because I've written many blog posts where I kind of say, hey, we all could potentially become a victim of a cyber attack, no matter how much we protect our laptop with antivirus, or no matter how many layers of authentication we put at our place of business, for physical access entry. there's always that risk that we're going to fall victim. But the thing is, if you do, how well can you recover from it, and how can you have a proactive mindset, right, to recover quickly
exactly.
and bounce back and apply the lessons learned? And I take that mindset, too. I mean, I've been in biometric cybersecurity 11 years, and my computer was hacked into a few months ago. You know, it's like, you know, and just recently I almost fell bait for a phishing scam on PayPal. You know, it's just so, you just don't know what's going to happen out there. You know, it's just all, you know, human emotions. It's not a quantitative measure. It's all so qualitative, you know. I mean, the way the cyber attacks are going now, it's not so much, you know, the smash and grab campaigns. Okay, let's take it and see what we can get. It's more of playing on emotions, fears, and with that qualitative approach, that's what I think intensifies the, you know, that probability of becoming a victim, right?
Yeah, I think emotions do play a big part in the fear aspect. And when people are afraid to really look, you know, I don't know if this is appropriate, but look the devil in the eyes and say, you know what, I see you. How do I get rid of you? Or how do I mitigate the exposure? It's fear that stops us from doing things. I once heard a story about a cat. A lady sets out a bowl of warm milk because there's a stray cat walking around and looks very hungry. The cat would not approach the warm milk for a long time. And every day the lady would set out a fresh bowl of milk for this cat, and the cat would walk around, and eventually get to it. The cat could have had fresh milk a long time before if they weren't afraid. But because they were afraid and because they weren't aware, they didn't get the benefit. And I think sometimes we need to approach cybersecurity with maybe less fear of the unknown and really try to understand what we don't know, which will allow us to make a better decision in the future. I don't know if that was if that story made sense, but
no, it does.
I think,
but that kind of triggers a couple more questions. Like, why is the C-suite afraid to take action on initiatives for cybersecurity? And how should the conversation go from top down to down top in an organization? So, for example, I mean, the C-suite needs to convey their missions and their objectives to the IT managers, and likewise, you know, the communication has to go up the chain too. So how should all this be approached?
I think the first question is, what do we have? Like, what systems do we have? If we're going to look at a small organization, let's take a very small footprint. What is our phone system running? That's a question that not a lot of people will ask. Have our desk phones been updated in the last year? You know, what do we have running, and what is the status of its vulnerability? And what are we going to do in the future to make sure that those systems are patched and managed and looked at, the dust dusted off of it? What are we going to do about that? If you look in a computer room, you'll see systems that are plugged into the network that weren't touched in years. Why? Why are IT managers not aware? And why is the C-suite not going through the checklist of, have you looked at all these, you know, systems? Can tell me where are we vulnerable, and what are we doing to mitigate that?
Okay. Sounds good. So now, kind of going back to what's been happening around the world, you know, we had this recent conflict with Iran, and now they're kind of branded as a nation state threat actor. What are your thoughts about that in 2020? You know, we keep hearing about North Korea, China, Russia, blah, blah, blah.
I don't really have much to say on that topic, just because I'm not fully, I'm not really sure what's going on. And the reason for that being is there has been a lot of things that I've been working on, so I wasn't really paying attention to the media on this topic. However, what I would say, again, it's my opinion, is the future of war will be a lot to do with cyber. Because if you look at history, why was the internet created? A lot of people think that the internet was created as a media platform, but it wasn't. It was created as a diverse and very reliable way to protect our communications and our grid. If you take a country and you sever communications within that country, you could essentially win the war. That's how it was years ago. Today, if we can sever critical systems within a company or a government, we can, in theory, win the war. And that's my my opinion on that.
Okay. Now, here's some other thoughts out there I want to kind of throw out to you. The Internet of Things. I find that, you know, it's where everything's all connected and so forth. I find that to be a very scary proposition. That just increases the attack surface for the cyber attacker because there's so many vulnerable things out there. Many IoT devices, you know, like the smart home, they don't even have protection. A lot of people just use the default security thresholds, you know, the vendors already put into the product when it came off the assembly line. And another one I want to ask you about is the attacks to critical infrastructure. We've seen some of that happening in Texas, I think Baltimore, Maryland. But I think, you know, I think the cyber attacker is getting kind of aware that, you know, we're becoming now too focused on attacks to digital assets. I think their mind's going to segue now more into, like, attacking physical targets, like water supply, the national power grid. I mean, in my view, I think we could see something just as bad or even worse than 9/11, but not having airplanes crash in buildings, but like literally having our, you know, water supply shut down, the power shut down for weeks on end. What are your thoughts on these two different topics?
I do think about that every once in a while about our critical infrastructure, even automobiles, you know, like, everything is connected,
right?
And everything could be controlled. If we're going to talk about IoT, let's use Amazon Alexa, Google Home, Siri. All of those things are connected continuously to the public internet. And as they connect, they poke holes through your firewall. So there's definitely something that each organization needs to do. And actually, I've seen technologies for homes that allow us to segment IoT devices from your existing systems. We see a lot of companies bringing Sonos speakers and all sorts of different IoT things into their corporate environment and just putting them on the corporate LAN. And then they ask questions, are we secure? But that's a whole different discussion. And then when we're going further into critical infrastructure in cars, yes, there's definitely a huge risk there. I think there are good systems in place, and I say good, not great, to mitigate those risks. And there are some very, very smart people working on building new platforms and new technologies to protect those systems. I think, for me, the biggest and the scariest thing are automobiles. They're continuously connected to a public internet that, if they get compromised, could do a lot of damage. I spoke to someone a couple of days ago about what happens if our cars get compromised. With the push of a button, an attacker can deploy airbags to a car that is moving at 60 miles an hour. What is the impact of that? If we really sit there and think about what would the impact be of a car deploying airbags as the driver is driving at 60 miles an hour for no reason? It would be massive, massive catastrophe for any community. Very, very, very scary stuff. I hope that Ford and Tesla and GMC, they're all doing something to mitigate that.
Okay. Now,
Verizon
should
be that too.
Oh, go ahead, please.
Oh, Verizon's getting into smart cars as well. So Verizon has to be, really doing something there on that front.
In fact, I think Verizon's kind of like venturing into their own version of like a cloud, like their own version of AWS or Azure, if I'm correct, I think, too. I was reading somewhere.
Yes, all of the major telcos are diversifying. CenturyLink has been doing it for years. They have a very robust cloud offering and data center offering. Verizon's doing that, and AT&T, I'm not really sure about T-Mobile, but I know that Verizon and CenturyLink are the big players.
Well, okay. Now, have you ever been approached by a client asking about cybersecurity insurance policies? That's going to be another hot button topic. In fact, I've got a book. I'd sign a contract for that, and I'll be starting to put that, work on the manuscript later this year in the summertime. Has anyone approached you about that topic?
Yes. So we actually partner with different insurance companies to help with assessments, pre-cybersecurity insurance assessments. What I would say on that topic is cybersecurity insurance is in its infancy right now. And if we have cybersecurity insurance for our company, but I would strongly urge everyone to get it. It's very inexpensive. The downside to it is nobody really knows how it's going to pan out. I was recently talking to a partner, a friend who runs a similar company, a cybersecurity company on the East Coast, and they were compromised. A cybersecurity company was compromised, and by proxy, their customers were. So as a managed provider, you need to really think, how do we containerize each client to prevent spread if you do get compromised? Luckily, that organization had cybersecurity insurance, and the insurance company handled absolutely everything. I've heard other stories where cyber insurance doesn't cover everything. So you really have to look at who you're going with. One of the best ones is Lloyd's of London. And really do your research on the cybersecurity policies out there. And again, they're still in their infancy, and it's going to be a few years before cyber insurance becomes more robust.
Okay. Now, as we're starting out 2020, how do you see the landscape changing, evolving? And the second part of that question is, what do you think the biggest cyber threat's going to be this year?
Ooh, landscape changing. I think getting through perimeter security is a lot harder now than it was just last year. So perimeter has become very secure. In 2020, I think the biggest threat would be if I was to go down to the technology that is threatened the most, and that would be Microsoft's Office 365 platform. They are doing fantastic things to help mitigate all that risk, but because they handle so much confidential information within that platform. I mean, people's lives or companies, everything is within the Office 365 space. That is the biggest thing that we're looking after right now, is how do we not only mitigate, but how do we recover from it? And there's technologies that do a fantastic job in mitigation and awareness within that within Office 365. For instance, one of our partners is Iron Scales, which allows to the cool thing about it is when there's enough people submitting phishing emails to Iron Scales, the administrator of Iron Scales could then, with a click of a button, rip all of those phishing emails from all of the mailbox within the tenant. I think those tools are going to be very helpful in fighting phishing. I think phishing is a big deal. But there's a lot of other things that we could go into from a technical perspective that Office 365 is going to be, a lot of companies are getting compromised within that space.
Okay, now as we wrap up our show, Mark, one of the biggest questions I get asked, and I ask this to my guests as well too, do you have a proverbial laundry list or a list of top or three or four items that you recommend to individuals or businesses to how to best protect themselves or mitigate the probability of being hit by cyber attack?
Yes. So from a cyber attack perspective, is one thing is make sure that your passwords are very complex. And the easiest way to make a complex password is using passphrases. A lot of people don't know that you could use spaces in passwords. So you could write something like, get a better idea of what we do, period, is a better password than anything, most other things that you can do. Having a full sentence as a password, it's something easy to remember, and you can really secure your environment. The other thing when it comes to accounts is multi-factor authentication. You could mitigate 80% of your risk by having multi-factor. Multi-factor is that code that you get sent via text message saying, hey, you're trying to log in, type this code in. Or when you go to a bank, to the bank's website, they give you a call or send you a text message saying, are you truly accessing your bank? That alone will help mitigate so many threats. That's going to be very huge if you do that. The other thing is for businesses, especially smaller businesses, is really take a notepad and start documenting everything that you have that's connected to your network. Once you document that, or have your IT guy document that, bring it to you, you review it, and then after you review it, you ask the question, okay, what are we doing to protect it? Those few things will go a long way in protecting you in 2020.
Okay. Well, Mark, we thank you for your time for the show. I think it was an excellent broadcast, and thanks for your insight and knowledge, and we hope to have you again here in the future this year.
Thank you, Robbie. It was fantastic talking to you. Have a fantastic 2020, and wish you luck on that book.
Well, I've got three of them in the pipeline. I'm trying to get the manuscript for one of them done.
Three books.
And I got two more. One of them is on the cybersecurity risk insurance policy, and the other one's on artificial intelligence. So I've got my hands full for the next couple of years with books. But I'm trying to get this one. This manuscript is going to be on web application securities. I'm trying to get that completed, hopefully, here by this weekend with my co-author and trying to get that to the publisher. So.
Oh, I'm looking forward to reading those. That sounds I'm pretty sure they'll be very insightful.
I hope so. I got into a lot of heavy duty tech stuff on cryptography, network security. So I hope people find it helpful. Well, anyways, Mark,
looking
thanks
forward
for your
to
time.
Alrighty.
I hope to have you in the future.
Thank you.
Take care.
Have a good one.
Right.
Bye-bye.
You too. Bye.